I was there the day Horus slew the Emperor.
Hello and welcome to the Iterators Podcast, a podcast about the Horus Heresy game system for the hobby, gaming, and lore enthusiasts. My name is Daniel and I'm joined by my co-host Josh.
What's up, guys?
All right, y'all. So we're going to get right into this. So we're starting actually a new series and it's going to be called What We Play and Why We Play It. So Josh, why don't you kind of explain a little bit what this new series is going to be all about and how it's going to be a running theme within all the broader podcast episodes that we're going to be putting out.
Yeah. So really the what we play and why we play it, this is really a format to give players right now to start. It's going to be the two of us and then, you know, hear other players from the community locally and, you know, eventually globally as well. And it's going to give them an opportunity to really tell the narrative behind their guys. So I'm really excited personally, I'm really excited for globally, you know, who we see.
Oh, just bringing guys in from all over. Yeah,
exactly. I think that's going to be really cool. And I think it's going to be really neat to see, you know, hey, how is, you know, what are people in Florida doing? What are people in Virginia or what are people in Australia or what are people in Britain doing? And,
right.
And getting these different takes. And I'm really excited to kind of see the, I don't want to say like the marketplace of ideas, but like the marketplace of ideas with heresy armies.
Right, exactly. And so the whole kind of concept of it is, you know, we're going to be talking about what Legion you play, right? But more importantly than that, it's what you play and why you play it.
Exactly.
So a lot of times the concept of how we're going to be going about this is instead of saying
it's really a why you play, it's not really a what you play. We're not going to be
there's a what, but the more important would be the why.
Yeah, so, definitely more important.
So instead of kind of taking it from a red book kind of perspective of, hey, this is the Rite of War that I play, these are the legions that I, or these are the units that I take, blah, 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 blah.
Right, we're not reading, and these are the rules. Stride.
Exactly. That's a great way to put it. We're not going to be doing like, oh, hey, this is my list that I put on Battlescribe.
Yeah, we're not reading Battlescribe. We're exactly. not, you know, talking about the meta. That's not what we're here to do.
Exactly. Instead, what we're going to be doing is we're going to be building off the prior episode. So in episode 4, when we talked about the history of your creating a character through history.
Well, and we did the episode with creating a unit as well,
because it's an amalgamation of both concepts and we're bringing them together. And instead of doing like a Legion overview of, hey, these are what units they get and all that, this is the story I'm going to be telling with this Legion.
Yes, exactly. And so kind of looking at, you know, or looking at that, what story are you looking to tell, not only with your guys, but maybe what story are your guys telling within the heresy at large?
Right.
Right. And I'm really excited to talk about kind of ways to integrate that into regular play or, you know, event play or, you know, different types of things with that as well. Really represent what story we're looking to tell. And then we're going to be looking at where we got the ideas for our Legion as well.
Right.
So what inspiration, what background really inspired us? And then that way you guys can hopefully take those and kind of, you know, have similar ideas and get inspiration from it.
Right, exactly.
Is a big thing you were talking about earlier was inspiration.
Right, inspiration. Inspiration, I think, is extremely important because it's getting these ideas. It's not, again, we're not just going to say, hey, this works really well in Battlescribe when we're going to throw it on the tabletop. It's, hey, what ideas are we grabbing now that we understand, now that we created a character using historical references, using, you know, various, I guess, inspiration from different sources. What do you do with that now?
Yeah, exactly.
And how do you start to then flesh that out with your tabletop Legion or army that you play? And I think that's going to be so awesome, especially like you hit on earlier, talking about different people in, you know, globally, internationally, about where their inspiration is, where they're coming from, and how they're integrating that on the tabletop.
Yeah.
That's going to be so awesome just to kind of get all this.
Well, and this, I think the stories, and particularly from veterans and veterans and new players alike, but I'm really excited to hear the stories of people who've been playing, you know, for regularly for a few years, and they have a lot of games under their belt, and they have like almost this this veterancy in their models.
Well, like they, yeah, exactly. Like the history to them. Like exactly. This guy has actual history to him.
Yeah.
You know, that they, your headcanon is creating. So yeah, we're going to be talking about Josh's Night Lords. So stick around and we're going to get right into it. Now for the meat of the episode.
Yes, we gotta get into it.
So the thing is that you, now that you're kind of branded with the Night Lords iconography on your arm,
yep.
Kind of explain, you know, obviously what legion do you have the Night Lords, but kind of why do you play the Night Lords? And kind of let's get like a little backdrop into your mind when you envision Night Lords. What do you look to represent?
Yeah, I think that's a great way to. I think that's kind of the core of what we're looking to do here. So I'm excited to go back and listen to exactly that question again. But as far as for what I'm building and exactly the Night Lords that I have right now, really there's kind of three things that really stand out to me about the Night Lords and why I think they're a ton of fun to play and collect. So the inner conflict and really representing the ganger mentality, kind of the backstabbing culture and Nostromon culture,
right.
And how that the Nostromons almost poison the Legion, and really showing that and creating really interesting and just kind of twisted characters that. That really represent that and show the ganger mentality, also the cowardice of a lot of them. I love like, and it's fun too. Like I love playing the coward in the games,
right?
To show up and, you know, fire into someone. And then when they don't get the charge off, you know, show up and I was playing against Darius and his wolves. And there was a time when I had advanced towards him with my terror squad, shot all my shots into him and then stayed put. For him, you know, to not charge him because I'm there in the difficult terrain, right?
Right.
And I have that advantage, and then he moves up, and he doesn't get the charge off on me. He fails the charge, so he's not able to get in close combat with me. And instead of kind of being like the honorable soldier that would then go in and fight the wolves in close combat and come out of their hiding position, to instead stay put and, or even better, run away,
right,
and make them go through that difficult terrain to come after me after getting around.
It's very Nostromon in nature. It's kind of like the idea or the thought process behind that of kind of like when you play it that way, it's not necessarily. You know, hey, I'm looking at it from a tactical advantage, which there is that aspect to it, but more along the lines of
survive.
Yeah, but it's more exactly. It's more along the lines of what's a culture behind these guys?
Uh-huh.
Why are they doing what they're doing, and how can you kind of role play that on the tabletop?
There's a quote from the Night Lords Omnibus where one of the Night Lords characters is speaking to some of the lower ranking Night Lords, and he's basically saying like, you know, when have you guys have ever fought a fight that you didn't already know you were going to win? When have you ever pulled a blade against someone that you were afraid to die in that combat?
Right, like on an even match.
Yeah, when have you ever feared death? When have you ever done that? You're not warriors. You know, that's not who you are. And really playing to that. And, and that's a ton of fun because it's fun to have, you know, it's fun to move up and vastly outnumber your opponent because of tactical decisions and then drop Terminators on them and burn them and then charge them.
Right.
And they just have no, and they can't do anything about it. Right. And I love that.
Because you're looking for that unfair advantage from the way that they are represented in the fluff.
Yes.
Exactly.
And that's what they're looking for. And their rules really play to that well, where you're incentivized to outnumber the opponent and you're incentivized to get in and really gang up on the enemy and only fight when you know you're going to win. and when you know you're going to win, you get those buffs, but you also have the challenge of kind of when you don't have that overwhelming superiority, you don't have a buff. So you're at a disadvantage when you're not already in advantage. It's kind of this weird
like dichotomy.
Yeah, exactly. Where it's like when you lose hard.
Right.
Or it's like if you're not already supposed to win, you lose hard.
Right.
Or you just lose. But if you're supposed to win, you win big time.
Right.
And so it's fun to play to that. And that's my favorite aspect of them.
So you kind of talked a little bit about the inner conflict of the Legion itself. Why don't you kind of expound upon that inner conflict for those who may not know a lot about what Night Lords do or how they operate within a Legion, and how that kind of goes in, because you also talked about the ganger mentality about that as well. But how do you represent that in your headcanon when you're creating your...
So, like, how do I go about kind of going about doing that?
Exactly. And creating... So like, there's the game, the tabletop aspect to it.
Yeah.
But there's also the role play, because in your head, you have this whole headcanon that's occurring. Yes. Like, so whenever you're playing a game, there's this role play headcanon aspect of this is what these guys are doing or thinking or whatever. How is, like, the history of your guys being represented with the inner conflict and that ganger mentality?
How do, like, I, like, wrap that all together
before they get on the tabletop?
Yeah, yeah.
And then as that transitions onto the tabletop and how you role play that on the tabletop. Well, so you have a story.
You know what kind of what I do. So yeah. So. Cause there's a whole system, and this is really the thing that I think is going to be the most interesting for the listener, and, or I hope is interesting for you guys, but it's kind of this system where it's almost like an internal timeline that I keep with all my forces, where it's like, hey, you know, I think most people to a degree when they play battles, they're like, oh, you know, this is kind of part of their history. Right. And really playing to that, and like having a timeline and having something set up where you know you do have your characters and coming up with some background and lore, and that doesn't mean you know the end to their story, but maybe you come up with the start to their story and those games that as they go. And you were asking kind of how I do that, and I think there's one character that I have, and he's a siege breaker, but I have to kind of represent that inner conflict,
right.
Is he is a Terran-born Siegebreaker. So part of the whole deal with the Night Lords is the Nostromans don't really get along well with the Terran-born Marines too much.
So there's almost like this sense of like...
There's animosity.
Right, okay.
It's not like some of the Salamanders. They met with their other... The Terran-born and the Nocturne-born really integrated very well. You know, some legions had that quality integration, others did not.
Right.
The Night Lords were one of those that did not.
You guys aren't us.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And really the main, one of the big issues being just the Nostromans being pretty awful human beings in general. Right. It's pretty much just a planet of eternal blackness and crime is the general idea of Nostromo for those who aren't familiar.
I mean, I mean,
it's a hive city. There's no sun.
What's a hive world at that point?
Yeah, it's a hive world. There's no sun. There's extortion of mining colonies, incredibly, you know, economic disparity, just a lot of dark stuff, a lot of gangs, a lot of crime, you know, all the nasty things involved on Nostromo.
And so you have these, like, I guess, you know, there's that term that's like, what, there's no honor among thieves?
Yes.
And they definitely kind of... embody that as a legion of like, hey, they're both thieves if you want to look at it for like, but more than thieves, like murderous thieves.
Yes, 100%.
And they're both like, I don't really like you because maybe you have a position that I like,
right?
Or maybe you're for whatever arbitrary reason,
or just different culture, different,
exactly,
you know, just different.
Well, you're from that hive. I don't like that
exactly. and I mean, you're basically taking people that, like, literally, you're taking the equivalent of like modern day, you know, high security prison inmates, right?
Right.
And taking them and putting them into making them superhumans.
Making superhuman.
Right.
And killers.
Yeah. Yeah. And making them superhumans. And also their Terran born legion. And this is the other thing that a lot of people don't know about the Night Lords. Their Terran born legionaries were from I forget the exact name of them. But basically they were, there was the same thing. It was prisoners.
Right.
It was like criminals, and they were recruited from criminals. The Eighth Legion always recruited from criminals, even Terran criminals from their Terran born legionaries were Terran criminals.
So like GP penitentiary.
Exactly. So as far as, but again, on Terra post reunification, right? So these are like high level criminals that probably were using.
This guy didn't just steal pocket watch. This guy.
Dark tech type stuff. Like, you know, these are not good people. And again, the Nostromo influence coming in. And really,
so it just heightens that I guess that criminal element to the Legion.
Yes, and then you have the inner, and this is where the inner conflict I feel is really interesting. Where you have almost this conflict within Curse himself that is represented within the Legion. So Curse himself is a very tormented man, obviously, and he has a tough time with managing his emotions.
Don't say.
Yeah, Curse has a very fine sense of judgment. And he knows when things are right and when things are wrong. He's very good at that. however, he's not good at necessarily determining the, the punishment for when things are good and bad, essentially. And as a result of that flaw, and that's, kind of a silly way of looking at the character flaw of Kurz, right? Is he does have this sense of judgment. He knows what's good and what's, what's right and what's wrong. However, he judges that to the extreme because he's tormented by these visions of the extreme. Because
right.
when he sees people, he sees the visions of the worst possible future. And then basically is brought to destroy that
right.
because he sees the worst possible future. So he destroys them to destroy that future. However, the issue is before killing them, he often sees that switch and the worst possible future goes away because
right.
they've changed, but he still follows through with it. Because he knows that's what he has to be, because that's what the Emperor created him to be,
right.
was the judge, jury, and executioner. And that's really what Kurz is. But the Legion itself, the Nostromans, they take this to the extreme. Where Kurz originally, the Emperor says send the Eighth when there's planets or cities that rebel against the Imperium. He sends them to operate as a warning to never do this again. And so they act out that judgment and that vengeance and basically commit the war crimes and atrocities they do.
There's no Geneva Convention here.
Yeah. And they commit, horrible war crimes, but they do it. It's sanctioned. And that's the thing, is it's sanctioned and it is against
sanctioned war crimes.
Right. It's sanctioned war crimes, and it's also against those who have brought harm or who have done the ultimate foul, right, in the eyes of the Imperium and have rebelled. Right. It's the
right.
ultimate sin against the Imperial truth, right? Is to reject that, right? So this is the Emperor's judgment, the Emperor's punishment. And that's what, in my opinion, Kurz and the Night Lords are. However, it becomes twisted when these sociopaths, gangers, murderers, criminals take this and go, well, hey, Kurz does this. He does these horrible atrocities, right? And we do it, but we like doing it because it makes us feel powerful.
I see.
And we like doing this because
they get a sense of that,
it's no longer for this is the right thing to do from a judgment perspective. It becomes we're doing this for fun.
For self-gratification.
Yes, for self-gratification. And when there's that internal battle between the Terran-born and sort of this Conrad Kurz and Sevitar style of thought. And those Marines start to mark themselves with the Red Gauntlet to
right.
represent their allegiance to Sevitar and Kurz. And then on the other side of the aisle, you have these characters, these warlords, these gang lords like Nakrid Thol, right? And the other members of the Cryopterra that are really just warmongers and warlords from Nostromo and the nobles and extortionists and awful people from Nostromo that are now put in charge of the Night Lords because they have those connections. They have that power within the Nostromo community at large, right? So they then, are able to use those connections and take advantage of them to put themselves in positions of power. And they take the sign of the cross and bone, right? And that's
okay. So when you start to see, from a prospective Night Lords
yeah.
player, if you see like the cross and bones, you're kind of almost representing these guys
yeah,
and their allegiances to
who are Space Marines, and their belief is we literally don't care about the Imperium.
Mm-hmm.
We don't care about Kurz. We don't care about Horus. We don't care about the Chaos Gods. We literally are just criminals. We ruled on Nostromo. Now we're superhuman criminals that have Terminator armor, and we're going to go and take our spaceships and we're going to make our own little empire
right.
and extort instead of extorting the neighborhood.
Almost kind of like a Barbary Coast sort of kind of idea.
Yeah, it's literally instead of extorting the neighborhood on Nostromo, now we're going to extort planets and we're going to extort the resources and we're going to get rich and have whatever we want.
Right,
and
spoils of piracy.
The spoils of piracy. And that's why the Night Lords were, and I think Sevatar says this, but like they were really truly renegade before, even before Horus, because they were all always in it for themselves the moment that the Nostromans became
the Legion itself was conflicted prior to the Horus heresy. Like there was already, it was already fracticizing.
Yes.
And it was coming apart at the seams. All it really took was
they more so started to fracture towards the end of Thrawmas. They were mostly united. They weren't united with the Imperium.
Well, no, I mean the internal strife is starting
that really brought itself about throughout Thrawmas, because that's when you kind of have
to side.
Yeah, you almost have the duality of Kurs, where you sort of have two characters.
So you have the Bloody Hand guys, right?
Well,
they're the Bloody Hand faction, or the guys that go with that loyalty. With
the Judgment, Conrad Kurs, but then you also have the Night Haunter, who's sort of the alter ego to Kurs, and who is almost to the extreme.
And those are the crossbone guys?
And those side with the cross and bone. Because those are the ones that revel in that and just want to be warlords.
I see.
So you have this internal...
is that guys like the Painted Count and those sort of dudes?
Yes, the Painted Count is part of the cross and bone. Yes.
Okay, so if you read the Siege of Terror, I'm not going to get into like any spoilers or anything.
Well,
but like you could kind of see some of those...
Sort of. He also is part of the group that did go with Kurs to the Siege of Terror. So technically he also is part of the red, like
he's a bloody handed.
Yeah, okay. He's part, but he's still no strong.
But the thing is that like, that's like even within that faction
to Kurs.
Yeah, there's still some really screwed up guys in there.
And those are
and they're
didn't go off and do their own thing before going or post Thrawmas, but prior to Kurs going to Siege of Terra.
That's really interesting because I mean, again, so this is kind of the background to what's occurring within the Legion during the Horus Heresy. You're having this separation that this Legion is kind of fracturing at the seams.
Yeah.
And as the Horus Heresy is unfolding and you're inserting chaos, not chaos as in the primordial gods, but more along the lines of like nature of chaos and at war.
Yeah.
Right. And you're starting to see like as these guys start to get autonomy, that you start to see these factions start to create themselves and really and that hatred, almost like kind of animosity between brothers.
And the Night Lords themselves, even on Sagualsa later on, and this is post heresy, but you know, around the Scouring and even after that, the Night Lords on Sagualsa have conflict amongst themselves. There's a scene again from the Night Lords Omnibus where I believe this is Talos at this point, but he's speaking. He's like he's shut out from another portion of another squad of Night Lords. It's literally like two different squads, and they're on different portions of the ship. And he shut the door, and he's talking to them to be like, "Hey, I know that your guy died because of like something our dude did, but if you kill us, we're like the last Night Lords left. Like there's like 20 of us and we can't keep fighting each other."
Right.
And literally it's like this cry for like, "Hey, I know." And I think, I forget the exact situation, but basically that squad, like, oh, there was like a blood tie. There was like some Nostromian blood tie. Then there's this other squad sergeant who's like yelling at him, like, "You guys, you know, you owe us a life, or you owe us a body," or something like that.
Right.
And he's basically saying, "No, we're the last ones left. we can't keep
there's
doing
no bodies
this.
Left to give.
Yeah, we can't keep doing this because we're all that we have left."
And so now that you kind of have that background of kind of how the Legion operates in general, how do you get that as far as like a Night Lords player?
And take all that and what do I do with it?
What do you do with it prior to going on the tabletop? Like what is your, again, we're always kind of stressing
the narrative.
Stressing the narrative, but also it's carving out your portion of Legion.
Yes.
So like how are your boys representing that prior to getting on the tabletop?
Mm-hmm.
And then how does that being represented onto the tabletop?
Yes. So the background for my Night Lords is that these are actually some of the Night Lords that splintered after without getting into all the details, one of the first major naval engagements with the Dark Angels at Thrummus. This is one of the ships or one of the small fleets and its escort ships that splintered off. Right.
Okay.
And these were part of the Cross and Bone Night Lords. So these are part of
your boys
faction.
Are the Cross and Bones guys.
Yes. They don't care about Sevitar and Curse. Right.
Got it. Okay. And that's why you never play them.
Yeah. And
okay.
That makes sense.
I actually didn't know that.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why. So I won't say I never do. I have played Sevitar and Curse. I do
right.
The
but
models,
primarily.
But I mostly don't. Yeah. Mm-hmm, I mostly play my own characters.
Right.
And basically, so they go off and they're part of that fleet that goes off and does their own thing. And because they're these warlords and these warmongers, these, you know, again, criminals from Nostromo, they're like, hey, we don't even care. You know, we're just going to go and do our own thing. Why even stay in this Thrama sector? Who cares what Horus wants us to do? And this idea is also shown later on by members of the Cryoptera. So these are just...
And the Cryoptera is just a really brief overview.
The Cryoptera is the lords of... It's basically the High Council of the Night Lords.
Oh, got it.
It's
okay.
A member of...
It's kind of like their Mournival, almost.
Yeah, it's essentially their Mournival. It's eight Astartes that overrule... Or that lord over the Night Lords.
That makes sense. So anyway, going back to your guys. Sorry for that little tangent, but...
Yeah, of course. But to explain it to anyone who's not aware... But yeah, but basically these are these guys that they just broke away at the beginning. They were like, screw it. We don't care about Horus and, you know, his plans and the War Master. We're just going to go do our own thing. And so really my headcanon for them, and this is why I don't play them for any early heresy stuff,
right,
is it's really all later heresy raids and skirmishes. And I really like to play them at like 1500 to 2000 points. I don't
so
really
like Centurion,
to,
Centurion Plus.
Yeah. Centurion, Centurion Plus, a lot of, and that's
Zone Mortalis.
Yeah. Zone Mortalis. And that's where my headcanon is at for them. So that's where I keep my games. And I really don't have much armor. Cause headcanon and lore wise, it's just a fleet and they don't have access to a large armory, right? I have a couple Sicarans for them, but that's it.
Right.
I don't have any Spartans, no Land Raiders, cause headcanon, they didn't have access to it. Right.
Right.
So instead when I'm playing,
they just buggered off and did their own thing essentially.
Yeah. And to kind of represent that limited armory, what I actually bring for my anti-tank are, I haven't brought them out in a while. I actually haven't played my Night Lords in a while, but I bring out the quad rapier las cannons.
Oh, that yeah.
And it's just kind of like this thing that they kind of hodgepodge together, and they just, you know, they have it.
Like, we have these in the ship, and
yeah, and we're just going to use them. You know, it's what we have to blow up other tanks. So, you know, that's what we do. And I use a lot of the terror squads, of course. You know, veterans.
Because what you're doing is you're getting the inner conflict prior, like carving out your portion,
yes,
of the Legion. Mm-hmm. Is your guys are part of that Crossbones or Cross and Bones faction.
Yes.
Right. And they're kind of doing their own thing. And so what I find actually kind of cool that I actually didn't know prior to this conversation that we're having is the era of which you're playing them in.
It's all post-Thrama.
It's all, yeah, exactly. You're kind of looking at this like very,
very specific time frame.
Exactly.
And I do. And
it's
I do
it's almost like you're playing, like, again, if you're looking at it from a historical perspective.
Yeah.
You know, if you're playing, I don't know, Bolt Action or something like
right.
that, you're not playing like early war Germans. You're playing very late
playing
war,
like
Germans,
yeah, exactly.
With late war,
and it would be like the specific. It would be like, hey, what did the Germans that fought in Africa? What did they do after they lost the foothold in Africa? What did those guys do? What was the sergeant?
Like their composition,
yeah,
and
right. Where did they move to? What engagements? What front line? Were
and
they
so
put
your
on?
Headcanon, whenever you're playing a game, for the most, not all games, but most games,
yeah,
is kind of like, this is the exact time period,
yep,
that I'm playing them within the Heresy, and the Heresy only went on for about 7 years. Like, mm-hmm, the whole conflict itself, as devastating as it was only 7 years,
yep,
long.
So it's very
limited.
And so
you're looking at, and again, it's like World War II, well, again, a very limited time frame.
And then also that being said, I would be like, if Darius was like, hey, I want to play a scouring game when the wolves are going out to hunt down the traitors, I would be more than happy. And
oh, yeah,
all
exactly
of my stuff is completely friendly to do it in that
right,
setting
exactly
as well.
So you're kind of hitting, but you know, within the realm of 30K, you're kind of hitting within that post Thrammus, Thrammus to the Siege of Terra.
Exactly. And I have done some Thrammus games with our local Dark Angels player, and those have been a ton of fun. I actually used, I used Sevatar in one of those and did a few.
Because you're not,
well,
you're playing
guys.
A little different aspect of them. Mm-hmm. You're not playing exactly your boys, so to speak.
Right.
Or you're, I guess, the one that you really fleshed out.
Yeah.
You're kind of more playing Sevatar's boys.
Yes.
Right.
Exactly.
And you're kind of relinquishing your control over the your characters, your narrative that you created, to kind of, you know, using the same models, the same everything, but you're kind of almost switching mindsets to this is what's his name? What's your main character's name?
Dragus Mar.
Dragus Mar. So instead of this is what Dragus Mar's boys, and this is what he's doing with his thing, and this
and
is
I
how
can,
he
or
operates,
I can play,
and then you flip out, and you go, this is Sevatar's boys,
and I also have a
doing the bloody handed guy is doing his thing.
Yeah, and I have a converted Nacrid Thul model, and I have a converted painted count.
I guess the big thing is you're not taking the same boys all the
time. Yeah,
you know,
it's kind of a different headcanon.
Yeah, and
each
so
time.
When you play the game, you're like, huh,
I can do a Nacrid Thul game and play Nacrid Thul and his guys, or I can run those same tactical marines, and instead of running them with Nacrid Thul, run them with Sevatar, and they're now in my head Sevatar's boys.
Right.
Now there's characters that I have specific, like you know, Dragus Mar. He's actually the leader of this whole thing, and I actually
so he's like a praetor that you kind of roll with.
He's a praetor, but I actually rarely use him because part of my lore for him is he doesn't personally involve himself in many combats.
Oh, that's hilarious!
So
it's like he's kind of and again bringing that coward aspect because I mean the thing was inner conflict, ganger mentality.
Exactly,
cowardice.
And his whole thing is he is a criminal, right? He does not see himself as a soldier. He's like a Heisenberg in his mind. He's trying to build a criminal empire with overruling these systems that he's in charge of, right?
I see. Yeah.
So, because part of my headcanon is he's going and taking worlds.
So as far as your character goes, and we're not going to turn this into like a history of your character thing, but
a very
brief thing of that is like you're kind of pulling inspiration from Heisenberg, from like...
I hadn't thought about that, but
but kind of like these greedy corporate monopolies.
Right.
But using
a
very
an
pirate...
Al Capone.
Yeah, okay.
A pirate, you know, what's... Blackbeard. That's
yeah,
the one.
Blackbeard.
Yeah, Blackbeard.
Yeah, Blackbeard.
And Blackbeard's, and most of the time...
Because that's a criminal enterprise.
Right.
That he's
that's
kind of
literally,
forging.
That's literally, yeah. So he's very, very much... And like Blackbeard wouldn't go and personally duel another, you know, he's not going to go and find...
No, he's going to get his cronies to do it.
And who are the cronies? They're the Contakar. And who do I always run as my HQ is the Contakar.
Right.
So that's why... So whenever it's part of Dragus Mar and his boys... I'm running my 10-man Contakar squad as the warlord because the Night Lords can do that, and that makes sense that a crooked criminal who is trying to set up a business enterprise, you know, his piracy, you know, fleet, right? He's going to send his big tough guys in Terminator armor to go do his dirty work.
Right.
You
exactly.
Know? And then I there's one of the rites of war that I love. It's the Bloodied Hand. And it's or Bloody Gauntlet, and it's basically the idea is you're executing some of these some officers and men that are not loyal to your side of the Cross and Bone and Red Gauntlet, like inner
they're
rivalry.
Kind of like the
you're basically
the outcasts,
right? You're the outcast. So I have this other guy. Who so he's kind of the commander of some of the more Mark III and more older units.
Oh, so using marks to distinguish what things are.
The Siegebreaker with the Thunder Hammer and the Mark III armor and the jetpack, he is in charge in my headcanon, right? And I have all this listed out actually on this spreadsheet here, but he's in charge of a few different squads. And those squads I've modeled in Mark III armor because they're not getting the new stuff.
So he's like a
because
platoon
they're
commander.
Terran born, right? So they're not given the Mark IV armor. He's given the Mark III armor. They're not given the upgraded weapons. So it's like, for example, one of the squads that he's in charge of is a veteran squad, but they have just, they don't really have that many weapon upgrades. They just have a couple combi weapons and like a heavy bolter, right? And then, you know, another squad that he's in charge of is a support squad with Volkite chargers, right?
Right.
So it's not a Terra Marine squad, but it's a support squad with Volkite chargers and Mark III. So there's these little subtle differences. And again, a lot of this you don't know, but it brings me a lot of enjoyment to create this headcanon.
Yeah, because that's exactly it. You're creating this headcanon to your force, right?
Yep.
And then what you're doing with that is then when you play a game on the tabletop, mm-hmm. right? And I guess we can kind of get into how this kind of gets integrated into like pickup games and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Is when I play you, right? I may not know necessarily all this background to your characters, mm-hmm. right? And what they're doing or who's who and all that,
yeah.
right? I just know, but hey, that's a Centurion. This right. is this is that, right?
And I see it as, you know, Dragus Mar is trying to execute Sarthas JL, mm-hmm. and he's here to execute him and his boys because he doesn't want that influence in his fleet, his pirate fleet anymore, basically. Yeah,
that's cool. And so this whole conflict that's occurring now
this is a battle.
Is simply because in your headcanon, what you're playing, even on a pickup game, you're creating that, you're forging that narrative, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
You're creating,
and this narrative is constantly being updated,
mm-hmm.
you know, and again, it's not chronological either.
No,
because you can be like, okay, this conflict happened, that conflict happened over here, and it really, it's all these pickup games that you're playing.
And
what you're doing is you're kind of grabbing all these quote unquote like conflicts.
We were talking about this earlier,
right?
And I almost view myself as a remembrancer. Whenever I do a Thursday game, it's almost like I'm discovering like that site. It's almost like I'm going to the site of that battle and kind of picking through the artifacts and discovering what happened.
Almost like a historian to your boys.
And on my Google Doc, I go in and update, you know, what changed and what happened. And I don't do it all the time. Or I don't update the Google Doc like every time after the game. And sometimes it's just a couple little tweaks. And sometimes it's like, you know, some really cool and interesting stuff. But it's almost like this hobby time that I have just for myself that I enjoy, mm-hmm. that is like, I think it brings so much more value to the models, because when I see, you know, a model that I have on a display shelf, it's not just, oh, that's my Siegebreaker.
Right.
That's, you know, Sarthas JL. He was executed and there's this whole background and story behind it now. And then also what I think is cool, this is one of my favorite things, is it ties in other people. Because I know that they have their background and their story as well.
Right.
And then...
And that kind of goes into like campaign games and stuff.
Because
what we do is when we play campaigns here in our local community, mm-hmm. is we go, hey, we're going to play this campaign. It's going to be on this world, all this jazz.
Yeah.
Everyone give a summary of who your boy or who your Centurion is, right? Mm-hmm. Or your commander is, right? Give a summary of who he is and why he's there.
Right.
Right. And so when you're playing someone else, right? Like, right, I'm going to be playing Ultramarines, mm-hmm. this upcoming week.
Yep.
The very first thing, Sons of Horus.
Yeah.
The very first thing I'm doing is I'm going, okay, I went to my opponent, right, who I'm playing, I looked at his little summary of his guy.
Oh, to get it tied in.
Yeah, and I'm like, what is this guy all about?
I should do that, actually.
So instead of list tailoring, which, oh my God.
You're almost looking to see who he is and his character, and then you're creating a character.
Well, I already have my character. So it's like my character's background, who he's all about.
Because you're almost looking at it from like, if you were that person.
If I was that, exactly.
And you
know,
it's almost like the prestige of the other commander.
Exactly.
Is kind of the information you have.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Now
because it's like intel.
That's so
it's
sick.
Like it's intel. Like it's like, here's my character. This is what he's all about and everything like that. And then Horus Axeman does this, right? Like in the Battle of I forgot which one. It's in one of the short stories. But what he's doing is he's looking at the history, the background, the everything of who he's fighting, what he's fighting,
why
he's fighting.
The Iron Warrior's trap, the Iron Cage.
Yeah.
I mean,
that
was the whole thing. It was designed to counter the Imperial Fist because you saw over and over and over again, the Imperial Fist were known for this doctrine.
Yeah.
So Perturabo did something to counter.
There's a cool little part in, what book is it?
He's looking at the shelf. Give him 1 second.
Vengeful Spirit.
That book.
Yeah. there's a really cool portion where Horus goes up to the commander of of the Imperial fleet over Moloch.
Yeah.
And he knows everything about him. And obviously, it's Horus. He's the War Master. He's like, it's not hard for him.
Yeah.
But it's like he understands his background. He understands his battle strategies. He understands like what he's all about, his family lineage. And he's able to delineate
like what he's going to extract. Do.
Yeah, exactly.
That's awesome.
And it's and then when he goes and confronts him, he
very
kind
alpha
of
alpha legion of the you there, Horus Axeman.
No, that was actually Horus Lupercal. Horus Lupercal, because he's like, he just knows. And so he's like, I know what this guy's all about, blah blah blah, and I know what makes him tick. Huh. And it's kind of like that intel, that human intelligence aspect, you know, if you're looking at it from a like a modern military perspective, that's that human intel.
So you're almost role playing the commander trying to get that intel. That's interesting.
Exactly, because now that, you know, I created this really cool background of my guy, my opponent did the exact same thing.
So how can we how can we both like maximize our enjoyment from that and interact
exactly
with each other?
Exactly. Yeah. So, and again, I don't mean to derail what you were talking about your Night Lords.
No, that's awesome.
But kind of going back to that, so when you have, like, when you posted your little thing of, like, your character's mm-hmm. background, his history, you know, what he's all about, right? And then every single game you play, or, like, whether that be a pickup game or whether that be
which I am kind of
event,
sad, the campaign that we're about to kick up, I'm actually going to do my Emperor's Children, not my Night Lords.
Okay, yeah.
So it's going to be a different character.
But the thing is that every... Yeah. Regardless, every single time that you're bringing something up, it's you're adding to that lore. You're adding to the headcanon of which you are developing. And then you, again, you role play that on the tabletop.
Yep.
So, like, it's not just like, hey, this is the background of where my boy is, right? Or who he is, what he does, my commander, right? Mm-hmm. It's also like, because your commander thinks this way, right? And Ian kind of picked up on this a little bit briefly went over it in our last episode. It's... how would that affect his battlefield decisions on the tabletop?
Exactly. And that's kind of, and that's one of the things I actually wanted to really highlight and talk about here in all these episodes with this series is like, hey, how do you go about showing those differences? Or not differences, those decision-makings. Like, and mm-hmm. what
the decision-making process.
Right. And really, how do you go about, and this is why I say differences.
The OODA loop.
How do you go about showing the differences in their decision-making because of their character flaws?
Right.
You see, and it's like, so you take that. And so if I take like my character Chrysalis, the other one, Dragus, right? Mar. If you take him, and let's say normally I don't have him in a fight, but I do run him in a fight, right? And I do play him on the tabletop, and I have a model. He's like a converted knight raptor.
Okay.
So he would run with the knight raptors.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, I know who he is.
So he has, and he has like the whole skull face and all the skin hanging off the axe and the plasma pistol.
He's
so,
the guy that clobbered one of my.
Oh, yeah, because I ran him with the headsman's axe, right, and he has the, So, and that's kind of, again, playing to it is like, in again, he's not a good fighter, so I don't run him, even though he's a praetor, I don't run him with a paragon blade. I run him with the headsman's axe because it's a strength 8, so it can insta-kill, but it's only AP 3 rending, and it's at initiative. So I'm really fishing for a 6 to get that instant kill, you know, instant kill off. Right?
But it kind of shows who he is. Like what you're doing is
it shows that he's not a good fighter.
You're leveraging the rules of the game to kind of represent, again, that he isn't a good fighter. And that he's kind of looking for those sneaky shots.
He's looking for that sneaky hit to get off and then, you know, wait for you to trip or wait for something to happen and then kill you then.
Right, and taking like that attack of opportunity.
Exactly.
And it's kind of cool because it's like you're not really min-maxing your model in the slightest. What you're instead you're doing is how can I represent this guy on the tabletop?
I'm min-maxing my fun.
Yeah, there you go. that's a great way to do it.
And it's like I enjoy because now I have this cool story to go along with this character.
Right.
And then and I had forgotten about that, but he did duel one of your characters and he did he got the rend off and it instantly.
Yeah, it was a long time ago. Champion.
Yeah.
He was a world leader champion.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
And he gets in and that's something that he that would make sense for his character to have that lucky kill against the world leader champion. We did as the pre-siege of Terra kind of sort of similar to the actual painted count story. That was like one of the first games we played. So we just kind of copied that story.
And it's kind of cool because that's a part of that guy's history now. Mm-hmm. And now you have like history to your characters. So I'm not just playing a model because these are his stats and this is what he does and blah, blah, blah. That's boring.
Exactly.
It's more along the lines of, hey, this guy's did this, 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 this.
Yeah.
And I want to continue to tell his story.
Right. And since, and I started the Night Lords before book nine came out, but after book nine came out and with the addition of the Kantakar, my attention has really switched to enjoying playing them and kind of representing like them going about doing, you know, doing their little shenanigans with teleporting in instead of running Dragus, and instead of actually running the commander, representing him almost. And it's kind of funny because I always have it in the back of my head. Like he's just off on a ship somewhere else.
So he's literally just like, I'm going to put
like
this guy
over
here.
Taking the glory for the fight, even though he's not there. And then, and I like how I have him modeled where he has the skull helmet and he has all this stuff about him, almost like he shows up to the battle after it's happened and then, you know, commits, you know, takes part in the war crimes and atrocities after the fighting and takes credit for winning the battle, but was never there to begin with.
So it's kind of like that thing that you kind of referred back to at the beginning of the episode with when you were saying, like, which one of you guys have, you know, went into a fight.
Oh, yes. Yeah, you know, exactly. That's
not
him.
Think he would have went. Yeah. And again, that cowardice. It's
right.
I'm not going to go down there. I might get killed.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I'm too important. Well, that's kind
of I'm going to have this centurion over here go do it instead. He's going to do my dirty work. I'm going to come in after the fact. And then again, the spoils of war. Again, I'm not here. I'm not this great big fighter. I am an entrepreneur, a criminal entrepreneur.
Because that is literally this guy's mindset. And so that's the other thing, when I'm playing it, I'm kind of having this background mindset of, is this worth the engagement? And that's almost how I play Night Lords. Because you have to think
from
about
his perspective.
Well, because Dragus isn't there. So my headcanon is my headcanon is they take over some star port, right? Mm-hmm. And they basically use that as a raiding thing to then go out and grab other ships, Imperial ships, commandeer them, raid them, and then use those to add to his personal fleet. And that's basically this guy's goal, is I want to build out a personal fleet and have my own personal pirate nation through
the enterprise.
Enterprise that is based off of starports and local cities that we can use and basically lord over and just kind of extort our own little portion of the galaxy. And that's kind of that is literally what he wants to do. So when I'm playing games, even if he's not there and I have the other characters that I have written up and their forces, that are under his command, they're not thinking about, like, when they're sending in the Night Raptors, they're not going, we're here to take ground and hold this point for the War Master. And we're here to take this and hold this ground, 'cause this is a strategic point that we need. No, they're going, you know, hey, are we going to win that fight? Because if we don't, if we're not going to win that fight, there's no point in fighting it.
Right.
Because we can just go back to our ship.
Right. Exactly.
And we'll be fine. They're stuck here. like we can go raid somewhere else and kind of,
or culling the undesirables within their ranks.
Yeah. And I took a lot of, I love the Vikings, like the Viking culture and that whole era of history. And like, I love the idea of the Vikings just being like, hey, we're just going to go and, you know, these churches and stuff, we just want the gold that's here, so we're just going to go and take it. Right. I love the show Vikings as well. And the characters and like, Ragnar's demeanor and everything. It's awesome. I think it's really cool show. So I have some inspiration from that where they kind of want to operate like a pirate raider Viking type nation.
So you go into history,
and
you start to look at like what the Danish Vikings were doing in England during those wars and whatnot, or not just that, but generally in history.
I'm not so much looking at specific instances in history. It's more so like, hey, if I was a raider, right? If I was like in space, right? And I was basically a freelance superhuman who had my own fleet at my disposal.
I see.
And
so you're more kind of taking like a little bit of from like
from
history, but different aspects of history. So I like the Viking aspect of, hey, we're just going to go in here and we're going to raid a church because,
we're just going to take, it's just ours to take.
Yeah, like, it's not going to be defended, so why not? And then on the other side, you're like, also, we're going to go to, like, Al Capone, right? And how he kind of ran his empire in Chicago of, like, you know.
The backstabbing, the internal politics.
The Valentine's Day massacre sort of things. And because that, obviously, the Valentine's Day massacre, what made it such an infamous event in American history was it was unfair. It was brutal. It was unnecessary.
Uh-huh.
You know, even for people that idolized Al Capone, because Al Capone was idolized within by the populace. Exactly. They even saw that and go, huh, that's not really all that. That's kind of brutal. That's kind of nasty.
But imagine if instead of the populace saying that's kind of brutal, the populace is a bunch of Night Lords Legionnaires who encourage it.
Right.
And that's
bringing
where,
that grim, dark
and
twist
they're, and
they're, to
and,
it.
Right. And it's this no, and it's not only, so you have this, because again, it's not only, you know, Dragus Mar, he's not forcing his Night Lords to be pirates. They want to be pirates as well. They're thinking, well, maybe one day I'm going to get my own planet.
Right. It's like his goons. Right. It's so, like his goons that are like, you know, hey, maybe one day I will own this sector of space in which I can then do my piracy, and maybe I'll get my section of the spoils.
Maybe one day my captain accidentally gets knocked off and I become the captain.
I become that.
and you start getting into this.
And
this,
then there's an internal strife.
And it's almost like the dark, I love the Night Lords because all the dark nature of the human mind, all those the parts of society and the parts of people that they don't like. It's almost like the Night Lords, they revel in that.
Yeah.
And that's like their culture. That's who they are through and through. And
getting the worst aspects of human society and then flipping it on its head, and instead of saying this is something you shouldn't do, this is something that is it should be rewarded.
Well, and then my personal favorite part of all of this is all this doesn't even matter, because at the end of the day they die off and there's nothing, like they're nothing at the end of the day.
Right.
And so even though they're my guys and I love them, it's fun to say that.
Right.
Because that's part
it's
of
all
like,
for naught.
Yeah.
It's all for naught.
And because ultimately
they lose the war.
Right.
And they all get shoved to the Eye of Terror anyway.
Yeah.
So.
And they probably ended up killing themselves off. If they didn't get kicked out by the loyalists, they probably ended up killing themselves off.
And I think that's a good way to kind of conclude this is that the story isn't over yet for your guys. Mm-hmm. The story is still being unfolded. You may or may not know the fate of your section of the Night Lords Legion.
Next campaign, I might run my Night Lords, and we might find a whole another aspect of their. And there's more. I think there's more. There's always more story to tell,
right?
With the heresy, and there's always and when you have this level of background and timeline behind your guys, and I hope this gives you guys a bunch of inspiration and whatnot. But when you have this type of background, the story never ends.
Well, that about wraps it up for this episode. So just kind of a quick recap of some of the content that we've covered. So what was the kind of the big takeaways that you liked about the episode?
So I think the biggest thing for me was just realizing that I picked one ship, and this was kind of an epiphany moment I had while we were recording the episode and then thinking about it afterwards. But I picked one ship from a battle, and this ship isn't named. There's no special lore for it, right? This is just a random ship that was there, and developed this whole story with it, right? So it's really cool to think, hey, this one small aspect, really created this whole narrative, and kind of think, hey, what else are people going to do with it, right?
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to choose to kind of discover your Legion, almost like a historian or a remembrancer? We were talking about that, and kind of that's how I look at playing out the pickup games and the various campaigns. It's a discovery, so there's always more story to tell, and I think that's really interesting. And I think it's going to be really cool to hear. And I'm really excited to hear from you guys what stories you guys tell as well.
Yeah, exactly.
So what about for you?
I think the biggest thing that I kind of took away from this episode is the emphasis that's placed on developing your narrative. So by carving out a unique narrative, you create your almost like band of brothers.
Yeah, it's my guys. Yeah,
exactly. And then you get to flesh out their story.
Right.
So then you start looking at the whole list building as a tool to represent elements of a pre-existing force that you created up in your head, as opposed to using models based on their rules and having that dictate your narrative.
Right. It's like this this opposite way. It's almost the inverse way of looking at it, where it's like, hey, you know, let's tell this really cool story first and foremost and use the models to show that.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's awesome.
Well, in any case, we're going to do a couple of shout outs right now. So the first one will be Oil Spill Painting Studio. Check me out on Instagram and Facebook for any updates on my latest commissions and projects that I've been working on. For example, as of recording this episode, the latest project that I've been working on that I have up there.
All your other projects to work on this guy too. Dude,
Sons of Horus Centurion. So and if you're listening to these in order, right? That
the previous episode.
In the previous episode, the Centurion that we talked about, I got so hyped up for this guy that I decided to create his narrative.
Like, it's hard not to once you start building the narrative and like the care. And after we had that episode, you just got, I mean, you stopped.
It's like how could I not?
Yeah. You stopped like everything else you were building to finish getting him painted.
Exactly. I wanted to get him painted and then again, kind of represent the concepts that we talked about. And then again, kind of bring him to life in model form. And that's kind of a great kind of segue into our upcoming episode.
Episode.
Exactly. So what we're going to be doing is we're going to be talking about My Sons of Horus. So it's the what we play and why you play it.
So we're doing the same series for the next episode, but instead of My Night Lords, it's going to be Dan's Sons of Horus.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And I'm going to bring that. I'm going to talk about that character, kind of the culmination or the conclusion.
Well, and you've really gone into the whole, and not to get into it, but you've really gotten into the Chthonian, kind of similar how I gotten into the Nostromon culture. You really got into the Chthonian culture, and it's a totally different take, but it's so cool.
Yeah, exactly. It's bringing in history and offensive operations and how to meld those two together. Oh, I'm so stoked.
We got to save it for next episode.
Little teaser, right, for next episode. But in any case, if you want something painted with kind of a Horus Heresy mindset or having that narrative driven mindset, kind of what I talk about with usually my clients is I don't just talk about the paint job. I talk about, well, what's his background? Where is he coming from?
And then how do you go about like implementing that into the paint scheme?
Exactly.
Well?
That way you're not just getting a paint job at the end of the day. You're getting like a story that comes along, and the paint job is there to kind of tell the narrative that you want to tell.
Right.
So definitely, if you have any commissioning inquiries, you can contact me through social media at Oil Spill Painting Studio. Yeah. And that's on Instagram or Facebook, or you can also get a hold of me through my email at oilspillpaintingstudio@gmail.com.
Yeah. So as always, we can reach out to Dan for paintings for the awesome quality paint jobs. But another heresy news, we got the LVO or Las Vegas Open for 2022. That's going to be held at the Rio Casino. Going to be towards the end of January 28th through the 30th, and a bunch of Warhammer going down then. The event's going to be really cool. It's ran by Alex. He's over with the Death and Betrayal podcast. We actually did a collaboration on theirs here a little bit back and had a lot of fun. They're really cool guys, and I'm really excited.
Very narrative-driven mindset.
Really excited to see what Alex does with the narrative focus for LVO and kind of see that take a different direction, which is really cool. There's going to be a giant opening mega battle there on Friday, and then Saturday and Sunday there's going to be 6 more games to follow up and really get the results of that campaign. So
it's going to be cool kind of like creating that narrative throughout the
days. Narrative event as well is going to be the narrative Isfan 3 Return to Isfan campaign for all of the hashtag Return to Isfaners out there.
Oh yeah. Absolutely. But yeah, also be sure to follow us on Instagram and Facebook at the Iterators Podcast. And again, we want to thank you guys so much for the comments that we've received, for just again listening to our episodes and getting like just inspiration from what we kind of talked about. And then we've gotten all these awesome messages where people are just talking about like, hey, you know, I listened to your episode and this is what we want to do with, like, this is what I'm doing with it. And honestly, that's such a great, like, it's so fulfilling, I think. And really, like, my heartfelt thank you to all y'all.
I know you love seeing those and all the messages. And I mean, there's a guy, Adam, that messaged over on Facebook, and he was saying he would like watch the character episode. Like he said, he watched it multiple times.
Yeah.
And it's really cool. And again, thank you guys for sending out the messages and for reaching out to us. It has been really cool. And, particularly to see what you guys are building and then also see how you guys are kind of taking these different ideas that we've put time and energy working on and something we're really passionate about. And you guys are taking that and enjoying the narrative and different things. And it's really cool to see
and
that.
Sharing that with us.
Yes, exactly.
And honestly, again,
I can't wait to see the armies and all the stuff that comes out of this.
And the stories behind their characters and their units. Oh, it's going to be a fun ride. It really is.
Yeah.
But all of our updates on new episodes and what we're up to will be posted on our Facebook and Instagram. So definitely be sure to check that out. In any case, that wraps up our episode. So my name is Daniel, and I'm joined by my co-host, Josh.
What's up, as always?
All right. And we are the Iterators Podcast, and we will see you next time.